Blog Talk Radio.
And thanks. Mojuba Akoda, Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Oje Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun, to all the God children, Mojuba Egun, to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun, to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun, to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun, to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe-o.
Ashe-o. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everybody. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by New Power Radio Network, the United African Coalition for Justice and Human Rights, the People's Platform for Equality and Justice, and many other elements and arms we have reaching out into the community. We love you. We thank you. And we appreciate you for your continued support. So we are approaching our 8th year as Sign of the Times Blog Talk Radio. So as always, if you would like to support us, please reach out to myself as Queen Tahira on social media. Tahira is spelled T-A-H-I-Y. TheTimesHiyrah. If you'd like to make a contribution to keeping Sign of the Times on the air and expanding our platform, you can do so via Cash App at $QueenTahira. And on PayPal as well at signothetimes19@gmail.com. And of course, through snail mail, U.S. Postal Service. Our mailing address is 1623 Dalton Avenue, D-A-L-T-O-N, number 14939, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45250. And of course, I'll repeat that before the end of our broadcast tonight. And so tonight we have joining us a brother who is in need of getting his story, his case, his even the evidence even was not brought forth during his trial that left him with an unfair, pretty much life sentence in the state of Georgia. So we want to welcome our guest tonight, Brother Isidore Barboza. Greetings, Brother Isidore. How you doing this evening?
I'm good. How are you? Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm good.
Can you hear
fighting
me?
A good fight, still swinging at him. Yeah, we can hear you okay.
Okay, thank you. Okay. All right.
Yes. Yeah,
good to know.
Uh-huh. So please introduce yourself to the listeners, and we're going to try to break this down from beginning to end so that people may see things on mainstream media that don't coincide with your story. So it's really important that we take our time and tell your side. You know, because I don't think that you've really had an opportunity to really be heard. So please introduce yourself, and I yield to you.
Okay. I'm Isidore Barboza. I am currently serving 2 life without plus 50 years for a crime I did not commit. And to begin, I had an arrest warrant for 1 count of murder, 1 count of armed robbery. A couple weeks later, I was indicted. All of it happened. I was indicted, tried, and found guilty of 7 counts of murder with 1 deceased victim in the case, 3 aggravated assaults, 2 possession of firearms, and an armed robbery. 13 charges I was found guilty of with no physical evidence against me. And the main things that I think will free me, because you're going to read in the reports that I've seen and others will see probably on the computer, you'll see that they claim to have overwhelming evidence, video showing me committing these crimes. There's no such video. But there is video that was withheld from my case that frees me. There's video of the actual crime taking place. There's video where the victim's car was left, where the co-defendant that they gave me, a guy who I met that night, they made him my co-defendant. They found a car in a plaza where there was about 9 stores, and each of these stores have cameras. They did not present that evidence, which would have cleared me. The clothes they described me as wearing in the bar, they found similar clothes, well, of the robber, let's say, not the clothes I was wearing, of the robber, they found in the car. They tested for DNA. It didn't match me. 162 fingerprints, none matched me. The one witness who was also a victim in the crime, who got away, ID'd the person who he said held him at gunpoint and shot his friend. He ID'd him in a photo array, which I was in the photo array. He picked the guy, he circled the picture, initialed it, and even said, you know, the guy goes by a street name, Murder Mike or Money Mike. So he knew who robbed him, and a bunch of illegal things happened in my case, such as having witnesses sit in the courtroom during other people's testimonies, which this one victim who was a witness, the only witness who seen everything, nobody else ID'd me in court. The judge asked him, did any of you see Mr. Barboza at, you know, committing this crime? And every witness said no. This Brooks guy, who was one of the victims, he, like I said, in a photo array, picked the person who he said committed the crime, and then in court sat there while my co-defendant, another person who I just met that day, Renee Harris, she was having a plea hearing to get rid of all the charges on her for a plea of 5 years to turn on me. So she had an incentive to do that. he then, after seeing her point to me, got on the stand and kind of implicated me as being the person who committed the crime. I look nothing like the guy he picked in the array, and I don't go by any street names such as Murder Mike or Money Mike or anything. The DA in the case, he was very crooked. He was leading all the witnesses, telling the witnesses. So when Mr. Barboza got in the car with the gun in his hand, which is leading, my attorney objected to very few things, but that was one of the things he objected to. So he had to rephrase the question. Okay, well, with Mr. Barboza got in your car, what, if anything, did he have in his hand? He already told witness, my co-defendant, what to say. So that was another thing. When the judge asked the detective, was Mr. Brooks able to identify anybody in the photo array, the detective looked at the DA, and the DA shook his head no, which was Jesse Evans. And then the detective answered, no, sir, Your Honor, he wasn't. In my case, I believe, I'm not 100% sure as to if they're even allowed to use past criminal histories against you, but I do know that if it's more than 10 years old, that they can't even bring them up. But the judge in my case told the jurors that I had past convictions for, you know, robbery, possession of firearm and stuff, but then instructed them to not use those past convictions to judge me in this case, which, why would you even tell them that? There's, like, so much evidence that clears me, the mainly the videos of the crime scene where the car was left, and the clothing that they said that the robber slash killer was wearing, they found in the car. They said I was in my sister's car and Ms. Harris's car. They tested each car for DNA. The victim's car had blood splatter all over the front seat. So if I sat in that car or whoever sat in that car, that would be DNA transfer. When they tested Ms. Harris's car, they tested my sister's car. They found none. They found no DNA transfer. They found no gunpowder residue. I mean, they have actually no physical evidence at all. They tried to say that I called Ms. Harris over 30 times that night. My phone records do not show me ever calling that woman because I never called her. I never had her number. I didn't even know I met her that night, like I said. So there's, like, all kind of shenanigans in this case, and I believe that I was mainly convicted of my past record from Massachusetts, where I'm from, because, again, they had no physical evidence at all to link me to this crime. Not a single witness ID'd me in court as being the person that committed this crime. And here I am. Now I went to my trial. I lost, was found guilty of 13 charges. Again, 7 murder charges with one victim who is deceased. My co-defendant, who they gave me, which was Quandre Bentley, he was found in the victim's car in the driver's seat dead. So they also charged me with that. But even if they were to charge me with the two bodies, that's 2 murder charges. They charged me with 7 murder charges and found me guilty of all 7. In my case, I had wrote to a clerk of court in Cobb County by the name of Rebecca Keaton, and she had sent me my discovery package, and in there was an autopsy of a person who was caught in a crossfire and murdered 6 to 9 weeks before my case even happened. And on one of those papers, there was a sticky note that said, "You're a smoking gun." I didn't know what that was. I threw that to the side. But now, just thinking back, I believe that they indicted me under someone else's autopsy that had nothing to do with my case. I mentioned that to my attorney. He said, "Oh, it's just a typo or mistake or whatever." What he didn't know was the person who was charged with that murder, I knew. I was in the same dorm as this guy. He had a different DA, a different judge, and a different attorney. He wasn't even in the same courtroom. So how would that get mixed in there? I believe that they took that, they used that, and indicted me, which, again, is illegal. So I just went to my trial. I lost that. I went for a motion for a new trial, lost that. In my case, it is called boistering the evidence. The judge is not allowed to vouch for anybody's credibility, the DA, the police, or any of the witnesses. In my case, even after Renee Harris, again, who I met that night, was testifying, The judge told the jurors that she is only going to give true testimony as to what happened in this case. That's illegal against the law. It's called boisterous the evidence. And the Supreme Court, the appeals court, and trial courts have ruled that shall a judge, if a judge does this, you shall grant a new trial. The Supreme Court is where I ended up going for my appeal. The Supreme Court denied me, even though the judge did that. And another case was granted because the judge can't do that. In my case, it wasn't granted. So it's just like, from what I can remember.
Okay,
just,
so let's go back to the beginning of the actual occurrence of the incident. So you were with the person, Ebony Driscoll? Is that who you were with?
No, I was at Doc. They said that I was with Renee Harris and Quandre Bentley. I played a game of pool with that Quandre. I found out their names when I went to court. Even my lawyer came and asked me, do you know a Renee Harris? I said, no, sir, I don't. I never heard that name before in my life. And then he said, well, that's your co-defendant. That's the first time I even found out her name, because I was playing pool with the kid Quandre Bentley, who went by the name Dre. And when he introduced me to his girlfriend, who turned out to be Renee Harris, he called her over and he said, babe, this is Izzy. Izzy, that's my girl. That was it. That was our introduction, and I never knew her name until we ended up going to court.
Okay, so you and Quandre were playing pool.
Right. At the bottom.
And he introduced you to Renee.
Yes.
So, at what point did you and Ebony and Brooks come in contact with one another?
I never met Brooks. I never met Ebony, ever. We've never had contact. Driscoll, Ms. Driscoll, was one of the victims, and Brooks was one of the victims in the case. I've never met either one of them, seen either one of them in my life. I don't know.
Okay,
them.
Now,
know me.
Okay, so you were playing pool, and at what point? Because it says that in early morning hours of October 20, 2013, Barboza and two accomplices were inside Doc's Food and Spirits on Cumberland Boulevard with the intention of committing an armed robbery. So these two alleged accomplices, you don't know who they are, and they weren't, you
did not
where
know
did these two
all.
Alleged accomplices come from? Okay. So this is something that either the DA or the media has put out there, that you were with two other people and the intent was to rob?
Right. What had happened, and this from the 5 to 10 minutes that I got with my lawyer about maybe 6 times in almost 3 years, I met with him, and it was always for like 5 or 10 minutes. Harris, who met my second to youngest daughter, she knew my second to youngest daughter about a month. She and Brooks, she and Bentley were boyfriend and girlfriend. I was at the bar, I was playing pool, and he introduced me to her as Babe. So I never knew her first name, last name, nothing until we got to court. No, I didn't know them. And the Brooks and Driscoll, I never met them. I don't know them from Adam. All I know is they're both victims in this case.
Wow, so I'm looking at the photograph is here. And there is a female. I guess that's your Cody that you were speaking of?
Yes.
Okay,
short, dark-skinned girl?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where does she come into play? And I think that she made in order to testify against you.
Okay, when the case kind of broke, so to speak, when they found her boyfriend deceased in the driver's seat, of the victim's car, they found his cell phone. In his cell phone was multiple texts between him and her. So she was told that, actually she wasn't just told, she was also indicted and for the 7 murder charges, the armed robbery, and the possession of firearms. For her cooperation to turn on me, they dropped all those charges and gave her 5 years. So they had actual physical evidence against her in her phone and her boyfriend's phone. And neither of those phones was I ever mentioned in any of those texts. So they told her.
Well, so you just got engaged with the wrong people that night, sounds like.
Right. They told her, either you're going to jail for the rest of your life, or you can help us put him in jail for the rest of his life, and we'll let you go home in 5 years. And that's what she ended up doing.
Is there, where is your case at now? I know you said that you had filed an appeal and Corona was going around at the time. Are you going to put in a notice that Corona should give you an extension to refile, or where are your thoughts now as far as your case goes?
Okay, right now I'm at the state habeas petition for the court. You get court-appointed attorneys all the way up until this stage. Once the Supreme Court denies you, you have to pay for your attorney. So I've spoken to several attorneys, and they all want $50,000 to $70,000 to do the habeas for me. From the time of the denial from the Supreme Court, I believe you have 1 year to file your state habe, and that stops the clock on your federal habe. If 1 year passes, the federal habe is done. You lose the right to get that. But because of the coronavirus and not being able to go to the law library or talk to any of the guys who do know anything about the law work who could have filed a state habeas for me, they would have stopped the clock on the federal. But the attorneys are telling me that, again, if I pay them between $50,000 and $70,000, they will file the state habe, and then they will ask the judge, if I was to lose the state habe, which I don't see how I could, then they would ask the judge if he can kind of give me some leeway or reinstate the federal habe because it was not due to my negligence. It was due to the coronavirus and not having access to the law library, not having access to even getting any paperwork. I couldn't even get the forms to fill out the habeas because there was nothing here. There's no, I mean, they're understaffed. They didn't have no library. Even now, they might have library, you know, once a week, and usually just the workers can go in there and you got to write notes or whatever and ask them for stuff. But if you don't know nothing about the law, such as myself, you can't ask them for something that you don't know what you're asking for.
Mm-hmm.
So it's boiling down to, you know, paying for an attorney to get something done. But, again, if I can get somebody, anybody, to have them look into the video of the actual crime taking place, because in the video that my attorney showed me on his laptop, it showed different things going on in the parking lot. It didn't show me, but the DA told the jurors, oh, this video is kind of clear, and you can't see Mr. Barboza because there's a spider web going across the camera blocking it out, but you saw everything else clear. That's one thing that would clear me because I was not there. Two, when you found the victim's car, the passenger's door was open. Whoever got out of that car, one or all of those 9 Plazas caught who that was. Get that video, that clears me. It was behind a gas station. If you get the video, because every gas station in the country has cameras all over the place. They have cameras facing the street. They have cameras in the driving in. They have cameras all over the place. There's video that was withheld, destroyed, or whatever that clears me, and they did not present that. There's the DNA from the clothing that they said that the killer was wearing. That doesn't match me. That clears me. Dusting and DNA and, you know, the victim's car, my sister's car, Harris's car. They said I was in all 3 of these cars. But there's no DNA transfer. There's no gunpowder residue. There would have been, because it's impossible for you to sit in blood and then to sit in someone else's car and not transfer that DNA. They tested these cars. None of that evidence was found. So they, again, have no physical evidence against me. A lot of things they said was just blatant lies. The DA says that even the attorney general and the new DA who's on my case now, she said that there's overwhelming evidence showing me attacking these victims. There's no such evidence, or they would have showed that at trial. They also said that I had interactions with Ms. Harris over 30 phone calls. No such phone calls was ever made. So they're just saying stuff and getting away with it, and it's not facts.
Wow. Okay. If people want to offer their support or may know of an attorney that they can refer you to, how should they reach out to you?
The easiest and fastest way and cheapest way is through jpay.com. Just go on jpay to Georgia Department of Corrections and punch in my ID number, which is 100-165-5192. Send me a text, and I will immediately get back to whoever reaches out, whoever can help and make something happen, because there's a lot of evidence that clears me that was withheld and not presented, and they say in the tape there's overwhelming evidence, again, showing me attacking these victims on video. Tell them to present that video. If it exists, show it. They can't show something that doesn't exist, but they do get away with saying stuff that didn't happen. They said that the motive for the crime was I needed to pay some bills in my house. That, again, is not true. I told my attorney on several occasions, go to the bank and get my bank records. I had a joint bank account with the woman that I was with in Wells Fargo, and I had my own personal bank account in Chase Bank. So I had two separate bank accounts, and neither one of them were starving. So I didn't need money for the robbery. So when he said that I did this robbery for money to pay a bill, get my bank statements. That will show you that I had money. He didn't get none of my bank statements. The detective got up there and told a bunch of lies. He perjured himself, and he kept looking. Every time the judge asked him a question, he'll look to the DA. And the main thing was, when he asked him, was the only, because there was only one witness that seen everything. Like I said, everybody that got on the stand as witnesses, not one of them said they seen me do anything. Not one of them could say that, because they didn't. But none of them, including Harris, who was my co-defendant, she didn't even get on the stand and said she seen me commit any crime. She said that me and her boyfriend talked about a crime. She said that her boyfriend had a gun and I had some brass knuckles, but she never said she seen me committing any crime. She said she was in the back of the bar in the bathroom text messaging back and forth with her boyfriend, never mentioning me in any of these texts. She never mentioned nothing about, we went to court. When you go to court, when you have a co-defendant and you go to court and you go into the courtroom, you and your co-defendant go in the courtroom. I don't care what it was. If it was for a bail hearing for her, I still have to be in that courtroom. We went to court probably about 30 times before this trial. Multiple times we're in the court. I'm in the holding cell, so I could see the hallway, and I could see her coming through the hallway. Why wasn't I going through the hallway to go into the courtroom with her? Because she was, my belief, being coached by the DA, being told what to say, being rehearsing, going to, trial rehearsal, because I wasn't involved with none of those meetings, which anytime she goes somewhere, I'm supposed to go somewhere. And I was left in the cell and didn't see the judge, didn't see nobody, just sat in the cell and went back to the jail. That happened at least 25, 26 times. All these times,
honestly,
she's coming out of there.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, all of these times, when they took her out her cell, I should have came out of my cell and went to whatever meeting with the judge or whoever that she went to. It didn't happen. So that clearly, she was she was being rehearsed.
Isidore, that you would have grounds for a mistrial if all of these things occurred, right? Like, and there is no grounds of expiring or expiration on a mistrial, is there?
I believe that it would have to be mentioned in the court. I'm not sure. Like I said, I'm not too up on the laws here. Now, if I was back home, I would have been very familiar with the laws because the laws is concrete. Here, the laws are changing. Like every couple of years, they change the law to fit the district attorney's objective. It's always against the defendant. It's always to fit their criteria. And again, I mean, I've not been an angel all my life. I've been to court. I've even been to trial before. At trial, they sequester the jurors. They put them in a hotel. They take their notepads and everything with them. In my case, the judge instructed the jurors to leave their notepads in the conference room, which anybody can tell me that they didn't do it, they won't do it, but I know because of the direction that the DA was going in his argument that he went back there and looked at these notes because the very next day of trial, he would come out and change direction because he would probably read these notes and see that maybe, you know, one or two of the jurors was on my side, so he would, you know, start pounding in some non-facts and make them look like facts because there was no facts in the case, none at all. Everything they were saying, everything the officer said, everything the witnesses said, the only thing the witnesses said is that they seen the person that they seen committing this crime had dreadlocks. Well, at that bar that night, there was probably about 100, 100 and a half men with dreadlocks. The guy that the only witness, again, Brooks picked out of the photo array, had dreadlocks and was a lot darker skinned than myself. And then almost 3 years later, sits in the courtroom while my co-defendant is testifying, which no witness is supposed to be in the courtroom during any other witness testimony. He was allowed to sit in there the entire time until his time to testify. My lawyer did object to the detective sitting in the courtroom, but the judge allowed it. And what this detective did, Ron Waddell, he sat in the courtroom the entire time listening to everything each of the witnesses said, and he was taking notes until his turn to testify, which I believe he testified last, and then kind of reiterated what everybody else said to try to make it look like everybody else told the truth. The guy, I mean, they were pretty clever. I would definitely give Jesse Evans that. He is very good at foolery. He's very good at tricking folk. They gave the jurors my past criminal record from Massachusetts with charges that had nothing to do with similar acts. See, they can use similar acts for sentencing. They cannot use those before sentencing. They used them before sentencing. They used them during the whole trial. Like, the jurors are sitting in the little pool, the little pulpit thing, with my record. They're just pouring over my record. That's illegal in every aspect. And even when that was appealed, that wasn't even granted to me. They said that, as a matter of fact, they had, even in that record, they had a charge against me that was 10 years before I was even born. So I'm like, what the heck is this? And I pointed that out to my lawyer. I said, who is this? That's you. I said, how is that me? I wasn't even born on this date. And he's like, oh, man. Right, don't worry about it. Like, he like, everything was, don't worry about it, don't worry about it, don't worry about it. The main thing that this lawyer told me when he first came to see me, he thanked me, for one, because he says in the 30-something years that he's been practicing law, he's never, ever had a client to not speak to the police. He said, because when you speak to the police, they twist everything up. It makes it hard for him to defend you. He said, you didn't speak to them. I thank you for that. He also, after reading the police report and everything, he said, this is the most shardy case I've ever seen. I still today don't know what shardy means. He kind of tried to explain it to me, but I still am not clear on it. But he said it's the most shardy case he's ever seen and asked me when my birthday was. This was in, I'll say, December. I said, my birthday's in July. He said, that's too far off. When's your mother's birthday? I said, February. He said, I'll have you out of here by your mother's birthday. I was like, great, because I didn't do nothing. Then the DA, I guess, subpoenaed or whatever, wrote to Massachusetts to get my Massachusetts record. Once my record from Massachusetts arrived, that same attorney that said that it was a shardy police report, he'll have me out by February, this is in December, told me, I never tell my clients this, but I think you should plead guilty to life with parole. At least you'll have a chance to get out, which would be 30 years before I'm even eligible or considered for parole. I said, why would I do that? I didn't even commit this crime. I didn't do nothing, so I'm not taking 30 minutes. You need to do what you say you're going to do. And from that point on, he just really stopped fighting for me. I even asked the judge on multiple occasions to please give me another attorney. This guy doesn't come visit me. This guy doesn't talk to me about the case. This guy won't gather any evidence that I'm asking him to gather that would be helpful to me. He won't talk to none of my family member. And in court, a lot of times when you go to trial, you're allowed to have, you know, family members or support system behind you. What Jesse Evans did was he subpoenaed every family member that I had in the state of Georgia. So I didn't have nobody in the courtroom behind me except a bunch of sheriffs and police officers. In the case with Ms. Harris, one of the people that was supporting her was a woman from her church who was a professor and happened to been a very good friend of the judge. The judge even met, oh, I know you. You was my professor and blah, blah, blah. So they were friends. Again, that prejudiced my case too. He should have excused himself because if you know or are friends with any of the jurors or witnesses or anything, you can't be on that case. He was friends with the victim's support system. She had her entire church. Well, she's from Georgia. I'm not from Georgia, but she had the entire church back there. She had her family back there, and I didn't have nobody. They subpoenaed everybody that I could have had in there to support me as witnesses and then didn't even call them into court to testify about nothing because they didn't know nothing. They wasn't even interviewed, but they were subpoenaed so that they couldn't come to support me. So I was left alone in the courtroom.
And then your attorney wasn't worth a penny with a hole in it on top of all that.
No. And he was Kenneth Croy. And, again, in Cobb County, when you have a murder charge, they appoint you two attorneys. I guess they don't have a public defender's office, so everybody in Cobb County gets a private counsel, but he's appointed by the court. About, I want to say, 3 weeks before my trial happened, I'm wondering why I don't have two attorneys, but I'm told that, oh, he's the best at this and the best at that, so I didn't really push the issue because I didn't know too much about, you know, Georgia law and how they operate. But about three weeks before my trial, co-counsel comes on, a guy by the name of Bert Owens. He comes on as co-counsel about 3 weeks before the trial, and when he comes in, I tell the attorney, who's that? He said, oh, that's Bert Owens. He's your other attorney. I said, so we're going to trial in a couple of weeks. What can he possibly learn in a couple of weeks? Oh, he specializes in certain things, and that's what he's going to focus on. So I'm like, wow. So, like, the whole thing was a sham. And if people read the reports, it sounds real good. It sounds like I might have committed something. But if you dig into that report, you'll see that I clearly didn't do nothing. They'll mention stuff, but tell them to go a little deeper and get the facts of the case. They say that there's video. Tell them go find the video. Go look at the video. Look at the report and see that there was 162 fingerprints and none of them matched me. Look at the report and see that they found clothing that matched the clothing that the killer wore. Tested it for DNA. None of it matched me. They told my sister, told the detective, Ron Waddell, was interviewing or questioning my sister and told one of his partners to arrest her car. They don't arrest cars. They impound them. They seize them. They do different things with them, but they don't arrest them. They arrested her car and told her if she didn't tell them what they wanted to hear, that they was going to arrest her and put her in jail, and this case could take up to 3 years So she'll sit in jail for the whole 3 years until they figure out what happened with this case. When they arrested her car, as he said, they tested her car for DNA because the DNA transfer would have came from the victim's car to my sister's car. There was none. They tested her car for gunpowder residue. There was none. Why am I sitting in prison 9 years plus with no...
Yeah, and there definitely would have been blood spatter. There would have been DNA evidence. There would have been stuff all over you, even under your fingernails. You know, when they test for DNA, they test for DNA. They swab you. They take your evidence under your nails. They take your clothing. And like you said, if you were even inside the car and some trauma like that had happened, your DNA would have been in the car. I mean, or your fingerprint.
Right.
Come on now. This is such a blatant mistrial of justice.
Yeah. And they're saying that Cobb County alone there's like a 92% overturn rate for people that go to trial being, you know, wrongly convicted, 92%. And I'm told even by these attorneys that wanted me to pay them, you know, for the appeals and stuff, they told me straight up, if we win, we can get you out, but they're not going to drop all these charges. You're going to have to plead guilty to something, and then they'll give you time served and let you out. So I'm like, well, whatever it takes, I just need to get out of here because I didn't do nothing. And again, two attorneys came downstairs after my trial. They sat in the courtroom. I don't remember the husband's name, but I know that one of the attorneys was Ashley Merchant. She came downstairs with her husband, said that he specializes in murder cases. She's a extremely good trial attorney. For $70,000, she can make this all go away. When they sentenced me to life without plus 50 years, she said, for $70,000, I can make this all go away. And I said, well, if I had $70,000, you think I wouldn't have grabbed you from the beginning and not have went through all this crap? Didn't have it, so I couldn't even come up close with that, you know. So it's really a money game. In this state, it's really a money game. If you got the money, they'll give you some wiggle room. But again, even if I was to prove all this evidence is in my favor, I'm being told that they're not going to set me free. Yeah, this guy. Yeah.
So what are your next moves? What do you want the community to do, you know, to support you?
To try and fix me up with what it got is pro bono attorneys, attorney that can take the case on and just help me out. I mean, as far as money, nobody's got it. That's not gonna happen. So unless I get an attorney to get onto this case, I'm kind of really doomed. And that's sad that multiple attorneys that I've talked to have looked at the case and told me this is a winnable case. There's constitutional violations. There's harmful error. There's judge misconduct. There's district attorney misconduct. There's ineffective assistance the counsel for the attorneys. They're telling me all this good stuff, but at the end of the conversation, you think you can come up with $50,000?
Jeez.
That's what it's been from the start. I mean, they're ranging from $45,000 to $70,000 is what I've been quoted. So if there's an attorney out there that can take the case pro bono, I mean, like I said, there's a ton of evidence that clears me. Just present that, you know. Even when they
just
were telling the
truth.
Jurors, yeah, even when the judge told the jurors, oh, Mr. Barboza has a past conviction for this, Mr. Barboza has a past conviction for that, but don't use those past convictions to judge him in this case. The part that he left out was all of those charges that I had as past convictions, one, I paid for those, and two, they were 25 and 30 years ago. So why are you even bringing these up? made absolutely no sense to do that. In my case, there was a juror. One of the jurors, she said that her dad was attacked in his car. His throat was slit, and he was thrown out of the car and left for dead. The judge asked her, do she think she could judge me fairly? She said, I don't think so. Right then and there, she should have been excused. But the judge continued to question her, and asked her, well, do you think you can judge him? She said, I don't know. I don't think so. And then finally she says, well, I guess so. She ended up being a juror. I told my attorney, I don't want that woman on my jury just because what happened with her family is similar to this case that I'm being tried for. She still ended up being a juror. One of the other jurors, which is a huge conflict of interest, her husband was a district attorney in the same court that I was tried in.
That no way.
That person shouldn't have been on my jury either. Yeah, that person shouldn't have been on my jury either. She said her husband, her brother-in-law, somebody, if it was a friend of hers, that's still a conflict of interest. She should have never, she should have been excused right then and there. And then they're excusing people because they say they watch CSI and they know police lie. Oh, we got to excuse you. I'm like, what are you talking? I told my lawyer, what's going on? They excuse this person because they watch CSI and they live, you know, on the streets. They know how, you know, police fabricate stuff and do this and do that. So they can't be a juror because they understand, and this person can be a juror because they're going to be against me. That's not making sense to me. You know, so if I can just get somebody, anybody with some type of power to just get this evidence that I'm talking about, these videos of this plaza, really mainly the plaza, because that tells it all. Where that victim's car was found, whoever got out of that car, that's who was with Mr. Bentley, who they found dead in that car. That's who was with him. That's who the killer is. That's who the robber is. Get that video and see who got out of that car, because it wasn't me.
Now, let me ask you this, as far as the hundred and some odd fingerprints that they did get, I know that obviously there's probably victim fingerprints, but they didn't try to identify any of those other fingerprints that they found?
I don't know what they did. They didn't even pursue, when Brooks ID'd the guy in the photo array as being the person who robbed him and shot his friend, I don't even know if they pursued him, because once my Massachusetts record got here, everything went off the table. They just focused on me. They just started gunning at me. I mean, gunning, and bringing Harris to dress rehearsals to train her and to coach her into what to say, and she got on the stand, and she talked like, even if you look at the transcripts, she's talking like she was a lawyer. Like, she's saying words that police say, that lawyers say. This is not a person with a doctorate degree to speak like that. She was, like, talking police talk, DA talk. She was coached well, and she performed well. She got out in 5 years when they had actual evidence against her. She got out in 5 years. I got life without plus 50, and no evidence. The only evidence that they got is out of their mouth. Well, we got this, we got that, we got this, we got that. Where is it?
Right. What happened to the burden of proof?
Yeah, they don't even have the murder weapon. And as a matter of fact, they don't even know if it was a 9mm. They said a 9mm, a 38, or a 380. Those are three separate calibers. Which one is it?
They would shoot differently. They would leave different splatter residue and everything.
So, I mean, it's like, I don't know how they did it. And I, my whole child, I mean, anybody's going to trial, I don't care if you did it, you didn't do it, you're going to be nervous. And I'm going to admit, I was nervous. But I was very confident that I was going to win, because I said, man, they don't have nothing against me. I didn't do this. I know I'm going home. Even though it took them almost 3 years to try the case, I knew I was going home. When the jurors ever came back, like, after the trial was barely 4 days. On the fourth day, they found me guilty and sentenced me on the fourth day. They wasn't even out
an hour.
They might see the paperwork that they was out for an hour or so. They wasn't even out that long. They concluded the trial. They put me in a holding cell. I laid down, waited. I figured I'm going to come back in there, not guilty. I'm going to go home. Not too long later, they bring me back in the courtroom, find me guilty. Even when the DA and the officer was telling lies, I was speaking up. I thought that was my right.
Mm-hmm.
The judge excused the jurors and had them put a shock belt on me. And it was a belt with four prongs in it that was strapped around my waist. And the judge said, I have a trigger. This sheriff has a trigger. This sheriff has a trigger. If you speak out again, we're going to shock you. And it's the most painful experience you're going to ever feel. You're going to move your bowels on yourself. You're going to urinate on yourself. You're going to be flopping on that floor. So do not disrupt this court again. And I said, Your Honor, I'm not disrupting the court. I'm trying to speak up for my rights. This is my right. They're lying on me, and I'm speaking up. No, that's what you have an attorney for. I said, but every time I call him to tell him something, he doesn't listen to me. He doesn't come over here. Or he tells me to be quiet. I'm trying to hear something. He's not on my side, sir. So what do you want me to do? He said, I want you to just sit there and let him do what he's got to do. Another good thing, too, if somebody that can take this case can get in contact with a sheriff that was there for the entire trial. He brought me to the dressing room, downstairs, upstairs, into the courtroom. After my trial and I was found guilty, this sheriff downstairs was hugging me and crying and telling me that he overheard the DA telling people in the hallway, the detective and everything, I know he didn't do this, but if he doesn't want to tell on his friends, he's going down for this. He's going to fall on the sword. He said that he could not help me at that point because he was a sheriff, and I guess they're sworn to not repeat anything they hear from jurors or DAs or officers, but he said that when he retired that he would help me. If he still would help me, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm very close. I believe his last name was Cantrell. And we spoke every day of the trial. We spoke every day. He was a sergeant in the Army, and he told me when he retires, he's going to get me out, and he's going to take me out for drinks because this is wrong what they did to me. If he will swear, sign an affidavit or anything as to what he heard and how they know that I didn't do this, the DA even told my lawyer in front of me. I know he didn't commit this crime, but his buddy did. And if he doesn't want to tell on his buddy, he's going to take all the weight. Or he could tell on his buddy, and his buddy will take some of the weight. He'll take some of the weight, and at least he has a day to get out. How can you say that you know I didn't do it but still prosecute me?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was illegal, too. It is. Actually, it is illegal, but they did it.
Amazing.
Yeah. My main thing is if I can't get $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 for a lawyer, I need one to at least look into the facts of this case and not just read the paperwork, because the paperwork's going to tell you whatever it wants to tell you. Look at what I'm telling you, those videos at the actual crime scene, where the crime was taking place, and the most important video, whoever got out of that car in that plaza, that's your man, and it ain't me.
Mm-hmm.
I did not ever get in that car. I did not ever get out of that car. Like they said, arrested my sister's car and tested it for DNA and fingerprints and gunpowder residue, gunpowder residue and DNA, they didn't find that. My lawyer could have simply said, well, if Mr. Barboza committed this crime, then all this blood on the seat would have been on his clothes. When he got out of this car and got into that car, it would have been transferred. But they didn't find no transfer. See, he could have put a reasonable doubt in there. If he did this, then where's the transfer? He did nothing to defend me at all. If he got in Harris's car after this, where's the DNA in Harris's car? Where's the gunpowder residue in Harris's car? There is none. There's none in my sister's car. There's none in Harris's car. If he'd have presented that, that's reasonable doubt. He put no reasonable doubt at all to help me out. He actually did Zero to help me out. He was very, I guess they have a standard of performance, and as long as they're at the minimal level, they can get away with it. Even when my appeals attorney asked him, why didn't you object when the judge was mentioning that this witness was going to only give true testimony? He said, oh, I dropped the ball. I didn't think nothing of it. A seasoned attorney doesn't drop the ball. An attorney that...
Yeah, that sounds really shady.
Care, yeah, an attorney that doesn't care to help you and is really helping the DA is going to let that slide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it wasn't no drop no ball because he was a seasoned attorney, just like the detective, a seasoned detective. At probable cause, the judge asked the detective on the stand, was Mr. Brooks able to identify anybody out of this photo array? He looked at the DA, and I followed his eyes, and the DA, Jesse Evans, shook his head no, and the detective looked back at the judge and said, no, sir, Your Honor, he wasn't able to identify anybody. Now, in that case, if he didn't identify me, why am I going to trial for it? If he didn't identify anybody, how did you find probable cause to send my case to the grand jury? What was the probable cause? How did you find that? Nobody said they seen me commit the crime. The eyewitness, you lied and said he didn't identify anybody in the photo array. So what is the probable cause to send my case over to the grand jury?
Mm-hmm.
And why was an autopsy report in my file from Rebecca Keaton in my discovery package of a victim that was caught in a crossfire 6 to 9 weeks before my case even happened?
Mm-hmm.
Who is this person? And why is it in my discovery? And did they use that to indict me? I believe they did. I can't prove they did. They can't prove they didn't. Why is it in my discovery? And what made me really believe it is in the discovery packet that I have at home now, at my mom's house, it is numbered. Each page is numbered. And that autopsy report is, I believe, I want to say page 36 to 67. It's in there. They're all in number. They're all in order, all in sequence. That was not a mistake. The mistake was they accidentally left it in there after they used it.
Mm-hmm.
That was their mistake. But I don't think it was in there by mistake. I believe they used it, and there's nothing nobody can tell me to make me believe differently.
Mm-hmm.
The whole time it was, like, illegal. Like, nobody that they put for witnesses, and all of the witnesses that they had that said they heard this or they heard that, they were all intimidated. They was all threatened. I'm going to put you in jail. I'm going to take your kid. Even told my daughter, who ended up just going back home. She was staying with me here in Georgia. She went back home because they told her if she doesn't testify against me, they're going to take my grandson. They spooked the hell out of her. She just was like, hell, I'm out of here, Dad. And she left.
Wow, I can only imagine, poor thing.
Yeah, they went to my mom's house, which was down the street. I lived way up the street. My mom lived down the street. They went to my mom's house. I believe they said it was probably like 40 officers, all with rifles and guns and everything, stormed the house, no warrant, took everybody out the house, put them in the yard, took everybody's cell phones, went inside searching the house. Scared the hell out of everybody in there. My niece at the time was, 3 years old? They dragged her out the house. You know, dragged my mother out the house, older lady, and left them outside for hours. Took their cell phones. Went down to my house where I was living, took my family out that house, and put them outside. Took their cell phones. Searched my house.
As if they had committed a crime.
Right. They had no warrant for none of that stuff. They ended up getting my cell phone, which is fine. I don't know what they did with it, and they're refusing to give my property to my mother. I had a little wallet with me with my driver's license and different IDs and, you know, contact numbers for different people I did jobs for and stuff. They're refusing to give her my phone or any of those records because in the phone there's a couple of people that I would like to contact that was, you know, pretty good friends of mine that I met out here in Georgia, that I believe would, you know, help me in some type of capacity, they're refusing to give my mom any of my property. In my little wallet, I had money. They didn't allow me to take my money and put it in my pocket so that I could have money when I got to the county jail, and they're refusing to give my mother my property with my money, my phone, and all of my identification. They're refusing to give it to her. She's tried to get it on multiple occasions, and they're refusing to give it to her. And this has been going on for years now. So, I mean, the whole thing's a sham. Again, if somebody can talk to anybody, I don't know if it has to go to the senators, governors, somebody, get that video where the victim's car was left with the co-defendant that they gave me that I didn't even know, Quadre Bentley dead in the driver's seat. Get that video from them plazas. There's about 9 stores back there, all of them with cameras. Get those videos. Get the video from the gas station showing the car coming in, coming out, wherever. Get those videos. That there will clear me 1,000,000%. That's the main video they need. Whoever got out of that car, that's who committed that crime with Bentley, and it was not me. Get that video, and they ain't gonna have no choice but to let me go.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not
mm-hmm.
me getting out of that car, because I was never in that car.
Okay, so give your JPay contact information out again for those that may have missed it. And go ahead and wrap up with anything that you want to make sure that we cover with this particular broadcast, but we'll probably do this again in another couple weeks once we get your petition up and running.
Okay. Again, I can be contacted through jpay.com. My ID number is 100-165-5192. My name is Isidore Barboza, and anyone that can JPay me, I would JPay them back. And anybody that has any type of help or support, you can get in touch with Queen T. You have the radio broadcast blog. Get in touch through there, and I will definitely get the message because we stay in contact. I just need somebody to open this case, expose the injustice that is going on in Cobb County, and make something happen for me because it's already 9 years now. I have grandkids I haven't even met yet. Ain't seen nobody in a long time. As far as visits and everything, most of my family's back in Massachusetts. It's not easy here. It's not easy at all. And the Georgia Department of Correction is so corrupt and lopsided that it doesn't make sense. They pay for inspections. You know, when they do audits and stuff, they pay these people because there's no way that this place passes an audit. I'm talking from the food, from the medical services, from the embezzlement going on with people's money getting taken out of their accounts and not getting it back. And there's like all kind of corruption here. So I just need to get out of here. And if anybody can help to get that video and expose these people for the injustice, that would be greatly appreciated. Because again, 9 years plus for something I didn't do, that's not fair, that's not right. And I have a lot of people saying, oh, that's not right, but they're not doing nothing about it. You can send me likes and comments, and that's so wrong, and that's so this and that's so that, but what are you going to do about correcting that? You know?
Yeah. And you're absolutely right about the state of Georgia. They are being investigated, but if they're all buddies with the people that are investigating them, you know, they're not going to hold anybody accountable like they should. So it's going to take for the people to speak up and stick together and make sure that you all's voices are being heard.
Right. They even have the coroner in my case. I don't remember his first name, but I believe the last name was Frisk or Fisk. He was under investigation for all kind of corruption and collusion, and he was supposed to be fired, but they allowed him to retire so he could keep his pension and everything. He did the autopsy in my case way after the indictment and all that stuff. He did the autopsies in my case, and he wasn't even supposed to be on the job. So, I mean, there's a whole lot of shenanigans that they didn't tell the jurors and they don't tell the public. They even, and I seen it myself, they did a reenactment of the crime. It was like about a 30-minute movie type show that they had on. They was mentioning my name all through this reenactment, saying all kind of stuff that never even happened in the case. Another thing that's really important, too, is the judge asked each and every one of these jurors, have they heard about this case? Do they know anything about this case? Now, these people lived in the town that this case happened in. Stuff like that doesn't happen in this town. So this was big-time news. I watched my case on the news for a whole week straight while I was in the county jail. So for these people to say that they've never heard nothing about this case, that they don't know nothing about the bar, they've never been there, that's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
This case was such big news and so high profile that everybody in the country heard about it. Never mind the people who live right in that same town saying they've never heard about it. So, I mean, the whole setup was a setup. And if I can get somebody to expose that video, that would be very helpful, and that gets me out of here.
Okay. Okay, so again, my contact information is area code 513-913-2691. Feel free to reach out to me if you want to get in touch with Brother Isidore. If you missed any of his contact information, please reach out to me. I definitely will aid and assist in any way I possibly can. Brother Isidore, we're also going to try to get that transcript from court. I think that would be a great place to start to look at the evidence that's a part of the official record, if you will, and get this thing going as well. So thank you for your time this evening. The door and the floor and the mic are always open for you. If anything comes anew, you know, just reach out to us and let us know, and we'll be here to support you.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you. God bless.
All right, you're welcome. God bless you, too. All right, everybody, we're going to go ahead and sign off on Sign of the Times Love Talk Radio. This is Queen Tahira. Remember this. We love you. Thank you. We appreciate you, and most of all, we respect you. So we'll see you on the air soon. All right. Peace.
Silver platter, would it even matter? You'd still be mad at me if I could find an old thing, a dozen roses, which I would give to you.